All right. My name is Kenneth Goodrum, and I'm going to have my other co-hosts introduce themselves. So at any given time, whoever wants to go first, introduce yourselves.
Yeah, I'm RJ. What do you want us to say for introduction?
Just your name for right now, then yeah. We're going to get into something
else. So I'm RJ Yeomans.
And I am Felicia Wethington.
And what's the name of our group?
We are the LBC.
The LBC, yes. And this is for Dr. Carter's diversity issue class. We are graduate students at Rice State University, and we are actually doing this for grade. So, Dr. Carter, we hope you enjoy this podcast along with your coworkers. I'm pretty sure you're going to have other people listen to it because ours is going to be the best, Dr. Carter, and then we are going to get an A. Anything less than an A, Dr. Carter, we think you hating. But other than that, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to do this project. So we did our names, and then we gave the name of our group the LBC. And the LBC is not the group that Snoop put together. It's not Long Beach, California. The LBC is coming from the different perspectives that we will address these issues that we're talking about today. So it is from the lens and the perspectives of someone from the Latin community, one from the Caucasian, one from the Black community, and then one from the Caucasian, hence LBC. So you see, Dr. Carter, we are on it. We are creative. So that should be 5 extra points as far as extra credit right there. So the first thing we're going to do in the order of LBC is we've given our name, but we want to go ahead and give just a brief background, educational background, our lived experience, and what brought us here today for our class. So we'll start with the L.
Yeah, so I grew up in a Latina household. My mother and father actually adopted me, and so I have kind of a unique background. I graduated from Lourdes University with a bachelor's degree, and now I am pursuing my master's degree, which is interesting as a Latina. Not many are actually pursuing anything besides maybe an associate's degree, so being part of that community is really exciting, and I'm just excited to be here.
All right. So from the Black and the Africans here in America perspective, my name again, Kenneth Goodrum. I am from Cleveland, Ohio. I was actually born in Columbus, Ohio, when my mom and dad got divorced when I was 1 or 2. So Cleveland is home to me. So I grew up in the inner city of Cleveland. I graduated from an inner city high school, and then I went to a historically Black college and university, Central State University in Wilberforce, Ohio. I am considered a first-generation college student. However, my mother did attend college, Northwestern University. My mother actually graduated salutatorian of her class. In my family, I do have a family of educators. However, in my immediate family, my mother and father, my father went to Ohio State. He didn't graduate. My mom didn't graduate because they had me. And so I'm actually in my family, immediate family, the first to graduate from college. And I am in my first semester at Rice State University as a graduate student in higher ed with the career track of career service.
Career advising.
Yeah, career advising. Yes. I guess it would be nice to know what I'm getting my degree in. So that is my path. And then Arjun?
Then I will be representing the Caucasian perspective. I was born in Delaware, in the spring of 1982, so that's also a millennial perspective. I joined the Air Force and moved to Colorado, where I now claim is home. I miss Colorado a lot. But that's also where I got my bachelor's degree. I double majored in math and economics there at the University of Colorado in Colorado Springs. And then my wife is a member of the Space Force. So we moved out here for her to continue her career at Wright-Patterson. And so now I am pursuing the Student Affairs and Higher Education Master's Education degree at Wright State.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and jump right into it. So the first question, and anybody can jump in. So the first question we're going to discuss briefly is, what does it mean to belong?
Yeah, so I will just start. Yes. So to me, belonging is like a sense of security and support. I think it's important that we have a group and a community that supports you in just every aspect of life, you know, acceptance, inclusion, that's all part of belonging. And yeah, I feel like when you belong in a community and a group, you can be your authentic self, which is also really important.
Yeah, when you belong to any group, I think the connotation of belonging means you're supposed to be there. You're expected to be there. You are accepted in that setting. So in that sense, you know, belonging means you have a purpose there. You are supposed to be part of that.
And I like what you said about that. I like both of your responses, RJ. When you said that you're supposed to be there, that opened up a whole new thing. Because when I thought about this question, I looked at, it's easy to belong where you feel like you feel comfortable, but when you go into another atmosphere, do you feel that exact sense of comfort in another atmosphere? But I totally agree with both of your assessments of the definition of what it means to belong. To me, is where you feel comfortable and be your true authentic self. And so if we're going to build off of that, what do you gain from belonging?
I think Felicia said, you know, support. That's probably the biggest thing that I can think of by belonging to any group that you identify with. but in particular, when it comes to diversity issues, being able to have people that have similar lived experiences as you and being able to be accepted despite or even because of those experiences is a big, is very valuable in the sense of belonging.
Yeah, so kind of bouncing off of what RJ's saying, to me, belonging and what I can gain from it is just a freedom of expression and being able to kind of go back to that authentic self. And I believe that is so important, to be true to who you are and just be proud of it. And so I think when you find that community and belong to that community, you're able to express yourself and have common goals with others and like live your traditions and your heritage and be proud of that. And I think that is really important.
So I'm going to pull a Dr. Carter now. so should a community protect what it means to them? How should a community protect itself? And I'll preface it with a very short story. I went to summer school pretty much every year in my life. I was a smart guy, but I just was too smart for my own good. They didn't have diagnoses back then, so for me, I just didn't do the work. I was too smart to do it. So anyway,
right. So long story less long.
The summer school, Cleveland was very racially divided. So where I went to summer school was in a majority black, but in that particular part of town, it was at that time majority Latino community. And so that was a whole different gang. And at that time I was experimenting whether or not I wanted to be in a gang or not. And so I said that to say, I was in a place where I didn't belong, but I don't think I didn't belong there because one, I wouldn't have been thinking about doing the right thing, but also, you know, when you talked about your culture and being able to, you know, your traditions, I'm sorry, when you talked about tradition, that's what really struck a chord with me in a positive way. Should communities protect their cultures and tradition, and to what extent that should we do it? So for me, hip hop, like I'm a hip hop head. And so hip hop, it came out of the struggle of primarily the black experience, but also part of the Latin experience. And I'm not saying that Caucasians aren't allowed, and I'm not saying Latinas aren't allowed, but it's like, it's something about, to me, when people, we call them culture vultures, comes in and take our culture and then go out and do something different with it and make it in a whole different way. And I feel like we should protect it. As a community, how should we protect our traditions without being exclusionary? Like, maybe that's the question I'll ask.
Yeah. So I think just going off of just some things that I've experienced is just like, people not fully understanding your traditions, your culture. But on the other flip side of it is we want to be welcoming to those who want to learn about it. But then there is this fine line of like, you know, them crossing this line where they don't understand everything fully. And I don't think they, I don't want to say they never will, but a Caucasian is never going to understand, you know, the perspective and lenses of a Black man. But we have to be open to accepting that people want to learn about our cultures, our traditions, but also that we also want respect back, you know. So I don't know if you have anything to say, RJ.
Well, I'm just, I think this has always been a difficult question for me, because I absolutely agree that culture should be able to have what makes them unique. And I don't think that it should be something that is just appropriated by other people. But I think, and this actually kind of gets into, maybe this will be a good segue to the next question. I don't know how you want to do it. I think there is more of a gray area sometimes than people want to let on. I think nuance is important in these kind of conversations. As Felicia was talking, as you started, I was thinking of, and this might be a very specific example and that doesn't count for everything else, but I was thinking about Eminem and when he got into the rap game. You know what I mean? I was young then, and I was not as in tune with these conversations, so I don't know what went on or what kind of conversations were had about a white man, you know, becoming, you know, a rapper like he did. But, you know, there comes a point now where I think he, and like I said, this gets into that next question about permission to belong. He has been given permission by the community, whether overtly or not, to do this, you know, and I think that's a big thing when you have that buy-in. But I don't know how that started for him either, you know.
And that's great. Actually, that's one of, first of all, great segue. See, these are great professional podcasters, Dr. Carter. I just want to let you know that. That you're right. It's one of those things, because one of my favorite rap groups of all time is the Beastie Boys, and you know, like I have the 40th year anniversary album right there. And you're right. Eminem's, he came up through the system in Detroit. So it wasn't one of those things where he was, it wasn't a Vanilla Ice situation.
Right.
Like, it was a difference between Vanilla Ice and the Beastie Boys, Vanilla Ice and, Step Into the AM. Oh, forgot that quick. It'll come to me in a second. Third Base. There it is. Third Base. I drew a brain fart. And there's a difference between them and Eminem. Eminem came up through the battle rap in Detroit.
And I think Vanilla Ice is a great example of the opposite, right? There was not that permission given. He fell off very quickly because he was not accepted into that community.
And I think I don't want to speak for you, RJ. How does it feel? Because I don't want to say you don't have culture. I think a lot of times when we say culture, as a white male, like, what does that look like for you?
No, that's a great question that I actually spoke to in one of our discussions. I struggle with that idea. I don't think I have, I don't feel like I have a culture sometimes. Or it's a very bland culture if I have one, to the point that personally, and I'm not going to speak for every Caucasian out there, personally, I intellectually, even if I have never experienced it firsthand, I intellectually understand the issues that traditionally marginalized people have dealt with. But I also looking at those same groups from an outside perspective, they seem to have a closeness brought on by those shared experiences, by you know, understanding each other's struggles that Caucasian people don't have. And as I spoke to in that discussion post, I understand that if I did, if there was any way that, you know, I could ever do this, I would set myself up for a lot more struggles than the privilege that my skin has given me in life. But there are times where I wish I had that, where I wish that I could be Latino or African American or even a woman, just so I could have that shared identity, that culture that I feel like I lack in my own.
And that's a very good point, because when we look, when you talked about permission to belong, and when we're talking about belonging, it also, to me, I looked at whatever the what's the standard. You know, if you, you know, these are your words and not mine. If you're saying like, okay, I don't feel like I have a culture, then it's a thing of, oh, how do I belong to your culture? But yet your culture, if for whatever reason, is the standard. As a Latino coming into your belonging, yeah, in your culture, it's like the standard is based upon a culture that if the majority were as honest as you are, RJ, I think they would see like, okay, well, as a Caucasian race, like what is our culture? But if you go and you do your ancestry, you can say, well, I'm Irish, I'm Italian, I'm this, I'm that. And so therefore you can identify with that. But like you said, that permission, and even with the, especially with the Latino culture, and it was just a coincidence, so it wasn't purpose. Like, I love chips and salsa. So I didn't want you to think that just because you said it was chips and salsa.
I love chips and salsa, too.
But it was this comedian. This comedian said that he bet black people have eaten more pasta and tacos than Italians and Latinos. Like, we love spaghetti and tacos. I mean, I don't know. But I wouldn't want to appropriate the culture. When we also talk about belonging, and RJ, you're the segue king of this one. When we talk about what brings a sense of belonging to each one of you.
Well, before we do that, I want to touch on something you just said about, like, you know, if you have, you know, Irish ancestry, for instance. Mm-hmm. I do. My great grandmother was Irish, like, mm-hmm. legit came here from Ireland. Mm-hmm. And then further back on my father's side, we have German, but, I went through a period where I was like, oh yeah, I'm Irish. You know, and then I met began following a, Irish streamer, and she was asked this by somebody else. You know, oh, I'm Irish. And she was like, oh, where do you live? And they were like, oh, I live in California. She's like, you're not Irish. You're American. Mm-hmm. You know? And so, like, even that, and I don't think Clara speaks for the entire Irish community either, but the point is that there are some that would even bar that from, you know, being allowed to be your culture. You know, so I don't know if we can even claim that sometimes, and I definitely never want to offend anybody. So I have actually backed off on even saying, oh, yeah, I'm Irish.
RJ is doing a great job. So that's actually a good thing, because even in my community, it's a lot of African Americans that say, no, I'm American. I'm not. I have no links to Africa. Mm-hmm. And to the point where in certain intellectual and street level conversations, like, well, Africans don't like us. And I thought about that, too, until I went to Central State. And I'm like, no, they love us just like it's just the fact that they, it's so many nuances in that particular conversation. So I even changed my language. I'm an African that's in America. That's how I identify. I'm an African in America, because I look at the African diaspora. Mm-hmm. And so I look at all of those particular things. However, like I told you, I was born in Columbus, Ohio. You know what I'm saying? I live in Cleveland. I've never been to the continent, and that's, you know, goal for me, my wife and I next year. But I look at that also, like, what is that in Africa as a continent, not a country? So, right. I, you know, even finding out that there's even nuances in that to feel like what it means to belong. Rachel, Felicia, I don't know. What is it like for you?
Yeah. So growing up, I didn't really live in a Latino area. I was actually only 3% of diversity in the high school I went to. So kind of learning how to identify myself and still be comfortable in proud of who I am, but in a majority Caucasian area was, I wouldn't say difficult, but at sometimes I felt that I was unable to be my true authentic self, whether it be, you know, what I packed for lunch, for instance. You know, typical lunches are PB&Js, but for me, I would much rather enjoy some tamales, chips and salsa, but just kind of having to change who I was so that I felt like I belonged in even a Caucasian area was sometimes difficult because we definitely need to be proud of who we are, our traditions, our culture, and even like, you know, learning about the culture in school was completely different than what it really is. So that was kind of interesting. But I think now, as I'm in higher ed, I focus on like, how do I provide this atmosphere for students to feel comfortable and proud of who they are? And so knowing like my struggles, I just think that that's really important that we provide that on even a inclusive campus.
During your introduction, Felicia, you talked about as far as most in your I don't know if you meant your culture or your household, as far as only going to get there like the furthest, like an associate's degree.
Yeah.
So as a Latina woman, which is a whole different lens.
Yes.
How do you internalize what you're going through and the trail that you're blazing? So that others coming behind you can feel that sense of belonging.
Yeah. So, yes, like I said, not a lot of Latinos even go to post-secondary school. Most don't even make it through high school. So, I mean, that's a big accomplishment in itself was getting through high school and then getting my bachelor's degree. But master's degree, that's rare. I think like 1% to 2%. Are even pursuing a master's degree and then being a woman on top of that. I don't find it difficult in sense of belonging because I know I'm where I'm supposed to be and I'm proud of where I am. And I think that's kind of what gets me through is just the ultimate goal is to be proud and make my parents proud. And kind of being like this, what's the word? like role model that other Latina, you know, young females can look up to and say like, oh yeah, she did it. Like, why can't I do it type of a thing? So I think that's really important. And just like, I'm not going to stop here. I'm going to continue and I'm going to, you know, just bring more awareness to Latinos in higher ed, which I think is really important.
That's good. RJ, what do you think as far as what does bring a sense of belonging to you?
What a difficult question to answer. To me, what brings a sense of belonging is, I think, acceptance is a big thing. I feel like I belong to my community because my neighbors, you know, reach out to me for things. They get my help with things. They want to talk with me. They want to chat with me. They want to, you know, be invited to things we do. I think that's the same thing when we're talking about culture, right? Is that you need to be, to belong to a community, you need to also have that same level of acceptance where people want to talk to you. They want your advice on things. They want to include you in things. I think if I was living in my neighborhood and nobody ever you know, chatted with me, just asked me how my day was, or, you know, offered to help or asked me for my help, then just living there alone wouldn't make me feel like I was belonging.
Okay. So what, one of the things that I know that, and being in class with you too, what I love, and thank you, Dr. Carter, for giving, for putting us together. Again, this group is banging. But one of the things that I like when you two talk is that, even what Felicia just said, as far as we want to do tangible things to make sure that we're being intentional about how do we take what we're learning and actually, you know, going and making it a practice. So one of the questions I want to ask is the importance, or talk about, let's talk about the importance of listening to and valuing diverse perspectives and what it means to belong with other students. So I'm going to start on that one, is because as much as I love going to and attending a HBCU for my undergraduate work and working at HBCUs, I also can see the limitations of it or any other place of higher education if you don't allow yourself to go out and see other perspectives, because you're not going to be there for life. You're going to, you know, go to other areas. And so for me, the challenge I faced early in my professional career was understanding and accepting what it meant to really be diverse in just to be an African and American, just the diversity of cities. Somebody coming from Detroit is a different type of person that comes from Chicago. There's a different type of person that comes through Cleveland, although they're similar lived experience. The subculture that in many marginalized communities, sometimes that becomes the main thing. So what I mean by that is sometimes we'll claim a city so much to the point where we identify with the city. And that's a whole subculture, from the food to the clothes to the music, like it's, and that becomes our identity. But when we come in mixed company, it can cause conflict. So one of the things I found, as far as being a great listener, because when I'm serving a student, I have to look at or listen to what he or she is really saying, so therefore I can really get to the heart of the issue. And so I just want to talk to you guys as far as when we, you know, get our degrees and get these high paying jobs to pay off these loans that we're
taking. This is student affairs, man.
Right, right, right. You see how we all collectively laugh. You know, how important is it going to be for you two to listen and to value those diverse perspectives?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it's going to be extremely important, in the sense that there are so many lived experiences that I can't ever have. And as we were talking earlier about nuance, right? Like you can't make decisions in how you will help people without understanding some of that nuance. And you have to listen with the intent to understand and not with the intent to just answer. If you're not doing that, then I mean, that's got to be the starting point. Otherwise, the listening is going to do nothing for you. I think social media is really bad for this. There are so many people talking about so many different subjects, whether it be race or marriage equality, or right now there's a big push, big issue with trans rights. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just like, people are saying stuff on both sides, and I don't think anybody's listening to anyone.
Good point.
You know, and so there's a difference between hearing and listening. And I think it's important that we make sure that we understand that distinction so that we can help students to the best of our ability.
Yeah. So for myself, I think it's very important that we listen to better understand what students are going through, as far as shared, you know, experiences. While it might not be the exact same experience, you know, something that you've lived in a different way, a different experience, might work in that how you overcame something could work with a student that comes to you with a different experience, a different issue. And so also being able to put aside like your beliefs in order to better serve students, especially when it comes to, like RJ said, trans, the LGBT community, and just like, you know, setting aside what you value and what you think is right to better serve your students.
And one of the things, and again, that's why we are adult or group. So when you were talking, about, we may not have lived that exact experience, but we can take our exact experience and find the commonality in a shared experience. I agree with your statement from the heart, because I know what you mean by his heart. I want to value my belief system. My belief system should become a barrier, though. That's a difference, because I don't want RJ to give up his belief system to help somebody. His belief system should never be a barrier, though. His right. belief system should be, and if all of our, you know, there's a common, you know, if we're in, you know, spirituality or even science, even if you're going to treat somebody as a human being, the commonality is that, okay, we're all human. Mm-hmm. We're all human. So that's the common denominator. Now, my other belief systems may say something, but overall, I want to be treated a certain way. I want to be treated fair. I want to be treated with kindness. I want to be treated with respect because I'm a human, period. And that to me is a baseline shared experience that we all have. So as a practitioner, I just don't want my belief system to become a barrier. And anytime I find myself doing that, I need to be emotionally competent and intellectually competent enough to say, okay, I may not be able to necessarily have the resources to serve you, but I'm going to go with you to a person that can. And then probably sit and listen to the person that can help them. So therefore, I can get more, coaching, we call putting more tools in your toolbox so that you can use it. I want to be able to put as many tools in my toolbox to be able to use it, and being uncomfortable enough to be able to do that. And so I really like that. So one of the things that we want to maybe end on is, or what are some of the strategies that you want we're thinking off the fly. So what are some strategies that you think that we can implement as higher ed professionals? And I'll start off on this one too. So one of the things that's big for me is mentorship. That's something that's huge for me. Being a mentor I take students who have this one perspective, and like I would tell them, okay, if you claim you from the streets, if you claim you from this, don't forget, but utilize that and transfer those positive things into something new and keeping that going and showing them, okay, if I made it through, you can make it through. It may take longer, it may take shorter, but you can make it through. So for me, one of the things that I do is I purposefully create, intentionally create uncomfortable situations to have uncomfortable conversations so that my students can see a different perspective. And to me, that sense of belonging, because as you talked about trans, students that identify as gay, lesbian, or even straight, having them all come together and have this one conversation and letting it be uncomfortable has really opened up so that you can understand, like, wait a minute, if I've been through the fire with this with this brother, with this sister, what they identify as, I see them as a human. I see them as a human. So those are one of the strategies that I've done as far as a program. What about you guys? If there's anything that you've thought about that you want to do as a practitioner, a higher ed practitioner?
Yeah. I think that we talked in class, right, about sometimes I feel uncomfortable in spaces that are designated to be African-American or Latina groups, right? And I don't want to intrude on those spaces because I feel like I did feel like we talked about this already. Mm-hmm. So I want to change that perspective. But I did feel like They're already surrounded by white faces. They should be allowed to have a space that is free of that. And so in that sense, I would like to, if I ever get the chance, to offer more multicultural events, things that are hosted by a certain group, but like no other group should feel are unwelcome to. And then like, you know, maybe, you know, the Black Student Union, for instance, hosts a thing dealing with diversity issues that everybody is able to come. Or maybe it's something as simple as a potluck, you know, where there's an Asian group on campus that wants to just share cuisine from their own cultures, but everybody is welcome. It doesn't have to be some big, you know, deep issue on diversity, just something where we can, like you said, Ken, I think actually what you said is so pivotal to this whole conversation. Being able to identify other people as human is so important. And those kind of events where, like, you know, you've got some kid, some white kid from rural Appalachia who has never interacted with an African-American woman or a Asian man or whatever, to just be able to go and say, oh man, you know, this food is amazing. Like, can you share the recipe with me so I can make this, you know, someday, or, you know, how, you know, tell me about yourself, just so they can start having these conversations and just recognize that, you know, what we see on the outside is not who we are.
Good point.
Yeah. So I would have to agree with RJ. The multicultural events I find to be very important, on a university level, to provide an inclusive environment for all students. I know Wright State tries to offer some multicultural events. If you've ever been to any of them, they are pretty cool. We had it was called Afro Night a couple of weeks ago, and it was the Black Student Union and the Amigos Latinos, and there was salsa dancing, food, and just like being able to see those two different cultures come together and host a really awesome event is so cool. And I think it's the effort that we have in becoming open to other identities coming into our culture. So if things are going to be uncomfortable, but you have to continue and put in that effort to excuse me, just if you want it, like, you can become an ally to different cultures. And I think that's something really important that we strive. While RJ will never identify as a Latino man, he can be an ally to the Latinos and understand their culture, and you know, he can love eating tacos and still be a part of that community, which I think, as long as the effort's there, that's what matters.
And the main thing, I don't think RJ should be bullied to be, you know, it's if you're closed-minded, that's one thing, but, you know, the one thing, and I'll use the word love about RJ and his participation in class is that awareness. And if you just want to know, then I'm okay to teach. But if you don't want to know, I'm just not going to bully you. And it's funny that you use the Appalachian community, because I fell in love with the struggle of the Appalachian community one time just by cruising YouTube. And I saw, and I'm like, wait a minute. And then they're right here in, I think, the southern part of Ohio. And I actually visited that community. And I said, oh, snap. Like, this, like, people are really living like this.
Yeah.
You heard what I said, people. Mm-hmm. I didn't say white. I said people are really living like this. Oh, man. And so I really started to learn more about the community, because, again, it's a struggle. And I don't want anybody to struggle. Right. And I don't want anybody to have to live like some of those people are living. And so it's just – again, I saw him as a human being. I just saw it as a human being. And just for whatever reason, it touched my heartstring. I was in a conference in Tucson, Arizona. And they talked about the Native American population. And so when you talked about, as far as going to school, how many of them don't, this is when I worked in TRIO, how hard it was for them to to function in school because of their family commitments. They only went is so the high alcoholism and the suicide. Once they were able to talk about it, it was a different perspective, because if you only look at it from the news perspective, you would think it's because they didn't want to do it. Like, no, it was so many barriers just for them to get the basic needs. It was like, okay, I was in a different setting. I knew nothing about that. Well, I thought TRIO was just for poor black kids until I saw white kids. I was like, wait a minute. Oh, this is for everybody. Oh, this is their struggle. And you don't want to play, like you said, the oppression Olympics or whatever. It's like, okay, but what they going through, that, like, that's bad. Like, you need, so, but if you look at us as humans and you look at our students as humans, we can do better and create those spaces. So in closing, let's wrap up with something either encouraging or something that you would want to say, or, you know, I don't know, just whatever is on your heart for the next few minutes, and then we're going to be done. So we'll go ahead, whoever wants to start.
I mean, I just want to say thanks for the opportunity to be able to do this. I think this experience has been great, that having the opportunity to, you know, come together and have the different perspectives we did. You know, we labeled this as the LBC podcast, but we talked individually about it's also, you know, Gen X, mm-hmm. millennial, Gen Z viewpoints. Mm-hmm. We didn't get to get much into that, but it's still, you know, our own experiences play through what we've said today. And so I think that's important too. And it's been great. So this has been a cool assignment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kind of ditto off of what RJ said. I think this has been really a great opportunity for us to come together and kind of just talk about, you know, our lives and just what's important to us. I think if you're feeling that you are not belonging, that there's definitely places on campus that you can find belonging and just make that effort. And if you're thinking about going to school as a Latino, Latina, I highly recommend it. Just because the labels are saying, you know, we're not in higher ed and that many of us aren't getting our degrees, that should not stop you. So.
And I would like to say this assignment, and I think you used the word ally. If nothing else, this assignment has brought three people together to become allies. Mm-hmm. And no matter where we go in our life, I plan to make sure I follow you guys as we continue to go through this particular cohort, but also just in life, because it's good to know that if nothing else, that there was this opportunity to have a baseline way of just coming together. And these type of assignments, that especially when the students take them serious, like we took ours serious, mm. Dr. Carter, so you can understand.
Right.
We took ours serious, Dr. Carter. And we not only just, it wasn't just checking a box, it was three people who actually I know will do the work. So with that note, the LBC podcast is signing off. This is the inaugural. Hey, we may do this again, so we never know. Because like RJ said, we didn't even get into the generation perspective. Yeah. But thank you, Dr. Carter, for the opportunity for allowing us to come together. And it's LBC podcast signing off.